Radio, I'm Carl Lamar.
The Patriot Act, turning citizens into suspects since 2001. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
You once claimed that you have an ability to face unpleasant facts. Is that what you've demonstrated in 1984 by drawing an accurate portrait of the future?
If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. The moral to be drawn from this dangerous nightmare situation is a simple one. Don't let it happen. It depends on you.
Wow. Now that's a grim way to start the show. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Oh, yeah. That's a grim reminder as well of the truthfulness of that statement. Jeez Louise. Anyway, I welcome you. I welcome you to the Kate Daly Show and also Melissa Smith. Welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you. It's always my pleasure to be here on Wednesday afternoon.
I love it. And we'll follow this hour up with Susan, and we'll be talking about Mueller Barr, May Day, and the big headline about Russia and Venezuela. And I'm going to point out some inaccuracies on that headline, a little bit about Assange, and will Trump be seeking a second term? Some interesting things on that, by the way, that I've been getting. So we'll get there. And in this hour, kind of interesting, we'll be talking about forced confessions. And we'll also be talking about a little bit of the tech stuff that's going on right now, too, with China, Australia, all kinds of things as far as surveillance goes. And if you guys all remember, I brought up the fact that I think it was Detroit that was welcoming the same camera system, the same type of volume of cameras as China. And China's initiative was 2020. And so to have it completely camerized the entire country. So we'll be talking a little bit about tech as well further in the hour. Also wanted to remind everybody, if you like this show, want to support this show, please go to Patreon under the Kate Daly Show and support the show. I really appreciate it. Melissa, we all appreciate it just because we have to have truth in media. And there's so much out there in propaganda that I'm so discouraged by all the propaganda, actually, and that it's making its way and seeping its way into ideology. And I just want to make sure that we are on top of all of these stories every day, pounding out the truth and making sure that we're identifying the truth and always open to the truth. So, Melissa, let's talk a little bit about forced confessions. We'll start there.
Well, I'm not so sure it's as much forced confessions mm-hmm. as why do people confess to things they didn't do?
True. That's a question for most people, because most people think they won't do that. So there are people doing it. So why are they doing it? Yeah.
Well, and once again, I mean, take a look at some history. It's fascinating. During the French Revolution, people actually turned themselves in, some people, not all people, mm-hmm. and were executed on the basis of their confession. Hmm. Why would anyone do that?
Yeah,
even
that
if you
sense.
Had done it, isn't your human inclination to, like, evade death at the guillotine?
Yeah.
You would think, right?
Right. Well, one would think, yes.
So yes. I'm reading this very interesting article about forced confessions in totalitarian systems.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look at, you know, in a society that's free, you don't have this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there have always been people who confess to crimes that they didn't commit. And sometimes it's a mental health issue.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Stalinist Russia, or we're talking about, like I said, the French Revolution, when people actually turned themselves in to a government whose wheels were grinding very hard at the elimination of problem citizens.
Hmm.
So, okay. I guess the interesting thing here is that the French Revolution had kind of devolved into a philosophy. At the height of the terror mm-hmm. during the French Revolution, they were looking, the philosophy that was being advocated is we have to purify our society.
Okay.
And we have to take all measures to purify. And it became a kind of religion of sorts to the people in France, where the highest sacrament would be to offer yourself as a way to help the process to purify society.
Right, right.
So if the society turns into a death cult, where we worship death as a method of purifying ourselves, and this is really odd. I mean, I think this kind of runs counter to the way most Americans would think.
Sure, sure.
But I'm beginning to see some evidence of this direction happening. You know, and it's kind of crazy. If the philosophy of your society is this unforgiving, almost religious ethic that calls for your total commitment to the cause, then offering yourself for some crime that you suppose you might have committed becomes logical. It becomes the thing that is understandable, at least.
Yeah. Huh.
And let me give you a quick example of that.
Okay.
We heard Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talk about environmentalism and how maybe we shouldn't have any children.
Sure. She's so ridiculous. I'm sorry.
It's the beginning of that kind of thinking. I'm going to sacrifice my own desires on the altar of environmentalism.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people thinking they're going to die.
So the world can be a better place.
Yep.
What else are we willing to give up for the world to be a better place?
And based on junk science, and so not even based on anything, a relative fact or a fact at all. So that is interesting that people can get so worked up on these things that they can, it does become their mantra, their belief, their, even though it's not really based on anything that you could produce. But at the same time, they are certain, right? Completely certain.
Yeah. And here's the statement. Out of this article, and this is kind of, it kind of gets under my skin a little bit. It says, if I, a sinful person who had tried and failed to live up to the revolutionary ideal, believed that I could hasten the arrival of heaven on earth by allowing myself to become a victim of sacred state violence, the temptation would be strong. Do we have people that have that kind of thinking in our society today?
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate to think that we do, but we do. The argument and the discussion has become so polarized, and there is no rational, logical place to stop some of this. The rich don't pay their fair share. Well, how much is their fair share?
Yeah, they
can
never,
anybody give me a number?
They don't disclose that.
Well, is their fair share to offer themselves to be executed? Is that when we say enough, they've given enough?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where, and we think, oh, it would never go that far here. But I don't imagine that in France, they thought it would go that far either.
True.
I mean, nobody says at the beginning of the revolution, the French Revolution, nobody was saying this will end up with mass executions of citizens. Nobody foresaw that.
Right.
But that's where it went. There's another aspect of it, too, that's kind of interesting. So why do people admit to crimes that they didn't commit? And we've heard that a lot, you know, people who will. There's a little example here about a man named Martin Tankleff in 1988 who was convicted of murdering his parents on Long Island. And he was only 17 years old. They brought him in, and the police lied to him in order to get a confession. And we know that that's not good. But if you were innocent, which DNA evidence later indicated that he was completely innocent of the crime, then if no matter what evidence they presented, wouldn't you say, I don't understand how that could be because I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Right.
And instead, he confessed. because the police were the authority figure and they're never wrong. When we begin to trust governmental systems so much,
right,
that if we're pitting ourselves against the government, they're never wrong, therefore I must be.
Yeah. Yeah, and you would think in that case somebody would know whether they did it or not. But I wonder sometimes if you were a witness to a car crash, and let's say five other people were too, and the other five people thought that they saw all the same thing, but you know you saw something different. Would those five people also, and not just even in government, but just people in general, would they be able to convince you that you saw something that they saw because they were all in agreement? So you would then question yourself again and think, well, maybe I saw it wrong. Well, maybe I mean, could people be in a position where they said, well, maybe I don't remember. Maybe I really did something. I don't know.
And you know, there are some great studies about that, about eyewitnesses, people that actually see things. And then they bring them in later. If they bring them in one at a time and question them, they will give their story as they recalled it. But if they sit them down in a group of people who are all recounting things, people's stories have a way of kind of finding the common ground.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Adapting. Yeah, that's true.
They question their own, like, did I really see what I thought I saw? Maybe I really saw what those other three people over there saw. Maybe, you know, we kind of second guess ourselves.
Yes.
Instead of instead of having the confidence, like, no, I saw what I saw.
Yeah. And I don't want.
I can tell you a million times that's happened to me, where I think, you know, what really happened? I can't really remember.
Yeah, that's very true. And I don't want to take away from your point too, that government does. We do have a certain sense of an authority figure telling us something, and then we go, wow, is that true? And are they, what they're saying about me, is that right? Instead of just knowing what you've done or haven't done, when you do have somebody sitting there in that authority position, I don't want to take away from that point, because that point is, it's very important, I think, to this discussion. I know we have to go on a break soon, but it's very important that we don't put them in that position like that. You know what you know. And, you know, where do you get that confidence?
Well, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, my recent hero here, he said the following thing about it. He said the way to resist it is to allow the lie to come into the world. Don't try to fight against it. He says, let the lie come into the world, even let it reign supreme, only not through me.
Interesting.
Yeah,
all right, let that sit for a second. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip. To the sound of the beat,
yeah. Another one bites the dust. Welcome back. Kate Daly Show here, and I've got Melissa Smith with me. And remember to go to Patreon, support the show if you can. Anything helps. And let me tell you, we need it. We need it. If you enjoy this program at all, please go to Patreon and help us out. That would be fantastic, and support Truth in Media, as we're always doing our very best to cover that. By the way, a couple of guests coming up. Dennis Prager next week. I'll be interviewing him. Evan Sayet, on Friday, Kindergarten of Eden, and he talks about how and why modern liberals think the way they do. Very interesting insights there. Also, William Engdahl coming up on the show, possibly Friday. We're trying to nail that down, and he has some very interesting new revelations about China that we'll discuss. Very, very good stuff. What did the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, put out about what's coming? Interesting. I'll cover that in the next hour. Also, Russia, Mueller, Barr, everything that's going on in the headlines, too, and a headline on Russia in the next hour. Wow. All kinds of things. We even have a guest tomorrow talking about religious freedom. He'll be on the show. So all kinds of things coming up. And right now we have the great Melissa, and Melissa Smith, and she always finds a very intriguing topic to talk about. I love this. But this is talking about confessions and how we succumb to questioning ourselves, or just getting to a point, I guess, where the interrogation stops for some people, maybe in admitting to something they didn't do. And then, of course, there's a parrot. We'll talk about that, too.
I love the parrot.
Yeah.
But if we think about, you know, when we're talking about the authority of the state, I found this article to be very interesting. It's a new application of evil Google.
Mm-hmm.
And what the police are doing now is they get, say a crime is committed, a murder happens at a certain location, and the police have no leads to go on. So what they do is they subpoena Google records and your cell phone tracker. They might get the list of 50 people who were within a certain circumference of that murder at a certain time. And then that you become automatically on the suspect list.
Jeez.
So it used to be a search warrants. They would go and say, that Kate, we think she had something to do with it. We know that, you know, the detective work.
Right.
Then they would get a subpoena for your information. Now they're getting a subpoena for a location.
That's interesting.
To just look at whoever was there. And so the law and order part of me says, well, you know, that's good. Maybe this this prevents,
you'll get,
you know,
a bad
this
guy?
Helps the police to investigate what might otherwise be unsolvable crime. But on the other hand, they've already had someone who came in who confessed to a crime he didn't commit because his cell phone was close to the location. And the thinking is, how could that evidence be wrong?
Right. Yeah.
You know, we think, well, I can talk back to the police officer, but really, can you talk back to the AI evidence against you?
True. That's true.
Now, this particular guy, they went on to say that in the investigation, they were able to exclude him eventually as a suspect because of some other mitigating factors. But it's hard. You know, we're looking at a world in which cameras are everywhere. Can the cameras ever be wrong?
Right.
Do we believe
or manipulated?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, do we believe that every single thing that we see in a photograph is the truth? What if they produce a photograph of you at the crime scene?
Which they can do. They can even produce it looking like they're talking to somebody that's passed away. And we've seen this over and over again with CGI. We've seen them recreate this. Their voice, their likeness, everything, so that you think that they're still alive. We've had people appear in movies that are since ceased, you know, and so, yeah, they're very capable of this. That's why I don't understand why people aren't looking at that and saying, my gosh, this could be totally manipulated. Why are we now relying on that as proof?
Well,
and convicting.
And we all need to go back and revisit George Orwell. We really do. That the clip you played of him talking about 1984 is really frightening, because I think George Orwell was able to see into a time when the truth can be manipulated in these kinds of ways. There's another story on kind of the tech side of things, that the federal government is using certain software applications that allows them to track like child pornography, among other things. And I want the emphasis to be on the among other things.
Right.
In order for them to prosecute these child porn rings, they would have to yield up information about their surveillance technology.
That's very invasive that they have not, told people?
They do not want to give to a defense attorney any information about their surveillance technology, so they are not prosecuting the child pornography cases.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you believe this?
Better to let them go than to actually yield up what are our true abilities to surveil people?
And here's a defining moment in what you just said. Instead of dropping the cases for lack of evidence or dropping the cases because they would have to use this type of surveillance to get the information which would encroach on Fourth Amendment, which you and I hate child porn more than anyone. But at the same time, we still have a Fourth Amendment for a reason. So they're only doing this because they don't want to be found out that they've already surveilled in this manner. And that's the difference, is they're not doing it because they don't want to use that kind of technology. They're doing it because they want to hide the fact that they're already using the technology. Correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. Since 2011, they have had more than a dozen cases dismissed because mm-hmm. the government was unwilling to yield up to defense attorneys their any information about their computer surveillance.
So what else don't
abilities.
We know? What else don't we know? What else are they doing? Well, I mean, there's a host of things. I mean, this is a perfect example of the fact that they're hiding this and they don't want people to understand more about what they're doing. And so we have to understand that this goes far above and beyond what we even think it does. And what we even think it does is bad enough.
Right. Right. But we don't know what they're surveilling. What we want to all believe, you know, in the absence of hard evidence, we all fill in the blanks for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to believe is that they are surveilling the bad guys in the world. They're
right.
surveilling the terrorists. They're surveilling
oh, yeah.
the people who have evil intent. But we don't know that.
Mm-hmm. No, in fact, it's not. In fact, they can take two Facebook posts that you made and actually mash them into one sentence to make it look like you said something you didn't say. And they did that to a friend of mine. They did it to a friend of mine. I wouldn't let him fly because of it. And he said, no, he said, I can produce my Facebook post to show you that I did not say what you just said I said. So I'm talking even simplistic manipulation. And then also, of course, this very heavy manipulation of not only the types of security they're using that we're not aware of, that we can't fight because we don't know. And then, of course, straight out manipulation of video and pictures. I mean, it's insane.
Well, Human Rights Watch is targeting this whole system because they're saying if the police or the federal government or whoever is in charge of this, if they are using it to flag people as suspects, then we don't know. There's no way to monitor whether they're actually getting factual information or erroneous information, but you have been targeted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not even know, just like that, just putting you on a no-fly list or, you know, limiting your ability to have access to a bank account, whatever.
Right.
So Human Rights Watch is looking at this and saying, you know, it's unclear what information the government is gathering and why. And
mm-hmm.
this could be a potential human rights violation. Now, if we live in China, there's no such thing as a human rights violation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one here?
Right. Right. By the way, China, oh boy, city of Darwin in Australia preparing to integrate the Chinese surveillance technology that powers its social credit system, virtual fences, quote unquote, is going to alert authorities of unauthorized activity. Now, do they disclose what unauthorized activity means? No. No, no. In fact, their technology, I talked about spreading to Detroit, the same to Australia. You're going to see more cities affected by this. Promise. Yeah, it's bad.
Well, the thing that bothers me about it is how quickly we can morph those systems
mm-hmm.
from legitimate law enforcement activity. I mean, we all want the bad guys caught, right?
Mm-hmm.
From legitimate law enforcement activity into some kind of weird sci-fi world where it's like Minority Report.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much information about the people out there. We can not only apprehend people who have actually committed crimes, but we can predict people who may commit crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it better to keep criminals off the streets? Isn't it better to prevent them from being out there to commit these crimes?
Mm-hmm.
So is there will be no safe haven. And the other part of that that bothers me is China's use of this in their social ranking system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we give the government permission to do this level of surveillance, it is not very far And mm-hmm. we've given over to them everything for them to prevent us from traveling.
Yeah.
If you are the kind of person who has an unpopular opinion, remember we're talking about in the French Revolution that the philosophy became so hardened that people turned themselves in.
Yeah.
If you thought the government was always watching you, mm-hmm. always knew every thought that you had,
mm-hmm.
if you had a thought that was not kosher, if you will, that's
PC,
not probably the politically
PC
correct
enough.
Word, but if you
yeah.
have a thought that's in opposition mm-hmm. to the line, mm-hmm. the party line, would you be willing to live in terror for the day when they're going to come and arrest you? Would you turn yourself in?
Yeah. And also the new term you'll be hearing too, CBS News recently promoted this idea. I don't know if a lot of people caught this, but they said the United States should look to countries like Australia as a model for regulating speech, regulating what you are talking about on Facebook, regulating what you are. So that's the new term, is kind of like good gun control. I mean, same kind of thing where you're total oxymoron, regulating free speech, and that we should be looking to these people as models for this. And so even anything you say, anything that they conjure up that they could put together that they think you're doing on tape or whatever the case may be, surveillance can bite in a lot of different ways.
Well, what if you're teaching your child at home
mm-hmm.
about your religious viewpoint?
Right. Yeah.
There's so many aspects of this that there will be no privacy anywhere. And the question we should all be asking is, who decides what kind of speech should be permissible? When we're talking about regulated free speech,
mm-hmm.
regulated speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's okay and who decides what's okay?
We'll be right back. More on the Kate Daly Show when we come back. I'm with Melissa today, and Susan's coming up next. We'll be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Welcome back to Kate Daly Show. Glad to have you listening. And from wherever you're listening, all around the globe, appreciate you. You can email me, kate@katedalyradio.com. You can also go to katedalyradio.com and get the podcast. Each hour of the show is up so you can listen again. And you can also send that out to your friends groups and your put it in chat rooms or whatever the case may be. We welcome you to do that and hope you'll do that, actually. Make sure other people know about this show. And if we aren't on your local channel, your local news channel, then make sure, and you're streaming live, make sure that you call that station and request the show. It's just that easy. So make sure that you call your local station and request the show. Melissa Smith from the show, the old show Voices of Dissent, joins me. And I'm so happy to have you on because we're talking about this issue and it's huge. And I also wanted to bring up the fact that there's all this new information that keeps coming out. I did a spot this week, I think it was this week, on United having cameras in their seats. And then United said, well, we just didn't really let people know because we aren't really utilizing them. Uh-huh. Anyway, and then also new documents reveal that Department of Homeland Security is actually asserting more broad unconstitutional authority to search travelers' phones and laptops, too. That's huge.
Well, because that's a place that they have access to.
Yes.
You, yeah. You know, you want to get on the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So hand over your phone or you don't get on the plane.
Yeah, this is so disparaging. I can't even tell you. I'm just mouth gaped open on this kind of stuff.
Well, if you'll remember, there were a lot of people who pushed back on having DHS, which runs the TSA, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're government employees.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? I think that is.
Yes, yes.
And there were a lot of people who said, well, maybe the airlines should do this kind of screening. Do you think the airlines would be as incentivized to take your phone and your laptop and take a look at it as a government agency would be?
Mm-hmm.
But we let them in.
I know.
we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, here's the fun part of this. So okay. We have to mention the parrot.
Because, this made news, yes.
Yeah, if you don't want to be surveilled through the normal channels, there were some drug dealers down in Brazil that taught their parrot to keep watch for them. And when the police were coming down the street, the parrot would shout, "Mom, the police." So
like
these
this.
People, nonetheless, they were arrested and the parrot was taken into custody.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the line in the article that talked about this whole thing, that the police were going to go super easy on the parrot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, the parrot was just trained to do this. But interesting. This is another interesting aspect of this. Once the police had the parrot in custody, mm-hmm. the parrot totally shut up and wouldn't talk for them.
We
that was a really well trained parrot.
You know, and it's so funny because we're not saying evade the police, but you know what, people, that if we are monitored and surveilled beyond what we can even conceive. And we are having cities like Detroit pony themselves up to be the next smart city, courtesy of China. And then, of course, China introduced that social credit on top of that, which made it incentivized to be a very good little government-loving citizen. What are your routes when you are absolutely surveilled? And I'm thinking of that movie, Enemy of the State, where he couldn't go anywhere, do anything. Everything was surveilled. And Minority Report, you brought up a great example. What do you do? How do you combat that? What resources do you have? Not much. So I think it's funny that they invested in a parrot. That's hilarious.
Well, yeah, the parrot's pretty hard to surveil, right?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I mean, talk about ingenuity for these drug dealers. As much as I don't agree with what they're doing, this was hilarious. And I think it's that think outside the box mode that I think we need to be into.
Well, it is. And I just kind of want to round out the hour
mm-hmm.
with a brief discussion about one of the things that we have to do is we have to begin to break our own mindset on some things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get out of, you know, get off the matrix, for
well,
goodness sake.
Can I mention something about phones? You know, how long do you think that those phones that do not belong under your name to a particular network, you know, yada, 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 those phones that are sort of anonymous still are going to exist? So why do we not have a couple of those in our possession, quite frankly? I mean, honestly, there'll be a time when those don't exist anymore. You're not able to buy a phone like that. And so it might be a good idea to at least invest in a couple of things you can see that will come to an end.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. But mm-hmm. we have to, and I think what you're talking about is thinking outside the box.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to get out of the box. And this is another very interesting and very intriguing thing to me that, there have been a couple of authors who've gone back and looked at the state of education before education was compulsory.
Mm-hmm.
And we now, if I'm talking about education, that term is automatically linked to state-run schooling.
You're right. You're right. It is automatically linked. Yes.
Yeah, we have that. That's a propaganda piece that has become linked together.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't used to be that way. And so this one guy took a look at Depression era working people
mm-hmm.
and what were they reading and what were they thinking about. And it says that they were much higher cultured than he anticipated. Many of them were familiar with Shakespeare. They were performing, you know, putting on concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the union worker that had education programs and cultural programs offered to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just here in the United States. This also happened there was a study of 19th century English working people who found that they were more literate mm-hmm. than the British working class is today.
Hmm.
So what happened when we made education compulsory and state-sponsored, did we give up our own drive to become educated people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
you're
I think
right.
we did in a lot of ways.
Yeah, we did.
There's not very many of us who have taken on the challenge to continue to be lifelong learners driven by our own inner drive to learn.
Mm-hmm. And that own inner little voice. Very interesting piece of that, too. It's there for a reason.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think what happens to a lot of us in the state school is that drive, if you're around little kids, they're like little sponges. They want to know how everything works and mm-hmm. why does it do that. And somewhere along the line in our years of education in a state-sponsored school, that little inner voice turns off.
Yeah.
We're just like, leave me alone.
Right,
I just
want
to think my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, those thoughts are not always
mm-hmm.
productive for becoming genuinely educated people. And I'm not saying we all have to read Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But we all have to be motivated by an inner fire to become educated.
Well, I always find it kind of interesting. You know, we talk about the difference between wisdom and information, wisdom and intellect and intellect and information. And you know, I look at a lot of these very learned, the people with, you know, 10,000 degrees, and I always find it kind of interesting that you won't find many thinkers among them, that they usually are very, let's just say, not open to any other school of thought, that they have kind of worked themselves through a system, right, of indoctrination,
right.
And then that's the indoctrination, but yet the reputation amongst the people are that person knows everything. They are most learned on whatever subject that they're on. But I actually find them the most closed-minded. And I wonder why society hasn't yet grasped that. I don't know. It's very interesting.
I think there's a parallel happening
mm-hmm.
in that we have so much information at our fingertips so easily now.
Right.
We all believe ourselves to be experts on
yes,
everything that
true.
We just Googled.
True, true. And then have the wisdom to know that you're not, because I know I'm not. I know I'm in a constant state of learning, and so I embrace that, and so do you. But yeah, there's like a humility that you have to have, but you also have to have that drive too to keep trying to find out and know you could be wrong on information that you've received.
We've all become enmeshed in a big echo chamber
mm-hmm.
where out on social media,
right.
our own prejudices and our own limitations are reinforced by other people who have the same limitations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it never broadens our perspective. It never opens our horizon. We don't, you know, the bad doctor doesn't know how bad he is because he doesn't know that options exist.
Right.
The bad teacher, I swear, if I talk to my high schooler about this, he will tell me this is absolutely the case. The worst teacher that he has in the school believes himself to be a really great teacher and will become very brittle about any feedback that he's not great
mm-hmm.
because in his own mind, he's become, you know, he doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Right.
So we have to become aware of that. I think that's the first step of learning. We have to become aware
mm-hmm.
that we don't know,
and
that makes us more receptive to thinking harder, deeper thoughts.
Right.
So, you know, we're talking about national security or whatever it is. You know, we need to think about some of these things, but we need to think about them, just like I said, you know, I want to believe that the police are operating with our best interests at heart. But I have to be willing to ask the question, is that really true?
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
And I have to be willing to entertain a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
people involved in any kind of hard line, this is how it is sort of thinking
mm-hmm.
have to be willing to hear the opposition to know what they don't know.
You know, that's so true. I mean, look at our stances on Syria, even our stances on Iran. We have to kind of understand that we might not have all the information, we might not know, and we might be listening to propaganda. And so even on Russia, even on Venezuela. So all of these things, when the expert, quote unquote, comes out, and they're very politicized, and they come out with their very expert opinion, and the propaganda has hit the masses, and the propaganda with the pitchfork thinks that something happened that maybe didn't. How open are we as individuals to go after and seek out information just to hear the other side? How often do we go to the other news sites just to see what they're saying? I think it's very important we do that.
Well, and you know, if you talk about the whole logical formation of having a debate with somebody, we all know that you've won the debate when they start shouting names at you, right?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
But I think this is really an important thing to understand. The worse we are at something, the more likely we are to overrate our skill and to not be receptive to any other perspective.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of having a debate mm-hmm. over anything, over any kind of, this is happening at all of our Thanksgiving tables, right? We
mm-hmm.
can't, we don't know how to discuss or debate anything anymore. And I'm not saying we should debate at Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
but we can't even have a difference of opinion
right.
anymore.
Yeah.
Because I've become so hardened in what I don't know.
Mm, interesting. And question everything.
You know?
Question everything. It really should
question
be everybody's motto, because I do now. I do now. Ever since doing this, 8 years in, I question everything, because you have to. I think that we do ourselves a disservice if we don't. And sometimes it isn't going to come up some nefarious plot or what have you. But I think we absolutely should at least do the questioning part. So it shores up your own what you believe, too, and maybe it can tear at its root, but it can also shore it up. So I always think having a discussion, that's why I have discussions on the show with guests I might not agree with, because I like that information coming in so I can assess it for myself, see how I feel about it, and see where my research takes me. So,
well, I know just in family life, this is often true. I remember being a little kid, and
mm-hmm.
I had been taught to sweep my basement stairs in a certain way. And
mm-hmm.
my dad came through and said, "Why are you doing it that way?"
Mm-hmm.
And I got very angry.
Mm.
And in the end, I had to realize that there's more than one way to do something.
Yep.
And I had
so
to
true.
Be willing to hear it. But
so
for a long time, I was like, don't talk to me about that. I'm doing it the way I was taught to do it.
Thank you, Melissa.
We do a lot of that.
Thank you, Melissa. You're awesome. Appreciate you. See you next Wednesday, as always. And Susan coming up next. Let's talk let's talk Assange. Let's talk Mayday, Russia, all kinds of stuff coming up. Thanks again, Melissa. And stay with me. We have more.